and welcome to the Trash Tapes Podcast as part of the Enigmatic Productions Network. If you love bad cinema and incredible deep dives into cult film, then you have come to the right place. So if you like what you hear and want to support us, you can do so by donating some funds to our Buy Me a Coffee website, along with the Acast supporter feature. All of these can be found in the description below. And now, on with the show.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Okay, I think we need to get in the mood.
Ready?
Okay. Give me a B.
B.
Give me a U.
U.
Give me an F.
F.
Give me an F.
F.
Give me a Y.
Why?
What does that spell?
Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Well, that was, yeah, I don't think, our cheerleading career is not going to kick off after that one.
Also, it only spells Buffy, not Vampire Slayer as well, but we just added it on.
We would be here all day if we tried to do that. Oh, man. All right, let's kick this off.
Stop watching that trash!
One man's trash is another man's treasure. Starring Johann Chappal as the Inflictor of Pain and Edward Harvey as the Victim. From Studio Enigmatic comes The Trash Tapes.
Everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Trash Tapes, where one man's trash is another man's treasure. I'm Johann Chappal, your host and the Inflictor of Pain, and I am here with my victim, Edward Harvey. How are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you.
Awesome. I think we're in high spirits today.
Definitely.
We're in high spirits. And it's the reason why we've got this episode is because very recently we had the surprise passing of Luke Perry. Which was a real surprise because it was from a stroke, and it happened really randomly.
Yeah, it's really sad.
It's really sad, you know, and it was kind of a part of of our youth, as it were.
90s pop culture, yeah.
He was in 90210 and a few other things like that.
He wasn't very old, was he? He was only 50 or something.
50-something.
Yeah.
So, in other words, I thought, let's look through his back catalogue and see if we can find something that's a bit rubbish.
Mm.
And so, going through that, I think the best option we found was the movie version of Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Yeah!
I just met this girl named Buffy.
I'm Pike.
Pike isn't a name, it's a fish.
I liked her, even though she seemed kind of flaky. But, as it turns out...
You have been chosen, Buffy.
To do what?
To stop the vampires.
Does Elvis talk to you?
When things started getting weird around here...
We're having a nightmare.
You threw a knife at my head.
And you caught it.
She was the one person I could really count on.
Kill him a lot.
Hi.
Hi. What are you doing here?
What am I doing here? I'm saving your butt.
That is a bad guy. Can we go, please?
The Slayer is unmasked. Let's finish it.
I think this relationship has potential.
How's it going?
You're obviously having a bad hair day.
If she can just get rid of those other guys in her life.
Stab him in the heart!
Christy Swanson.
I am so sure.
Donald Sutherland. Paul Rubens. With Rutger Hauer and Luke Perry.
Buffy, you're not like other girls.
Yes, I am.
Buffy. The Vampire Slayer.
I didn't even break a nail.
Directed by Fran Rubel-Kazooie.
So, Buffy the Vampire Slayer. This movie has, it's famously got a bit of a bad rep. And I think it's because, I think nowadays they've got a bad rep because it's compared to the TV series.
Yeah, I think it's unjustified. A lot of people really hate this movie.
Mm. They really, really don't like this.
Mm.
And I think it's also because this is all the Whedonites, all the Joss Whedon fans, because Joss Whedon hated what happened to this movie.
Yeah.
Because Joss Whedon wrote the original script. And then from that point onwards, things got a little bit hairy. So for anyone who's basically been living under a rock and has no idea what Buffy the Vampire Slayer is, we'll have to go and break this down. So Buffy the Vampire Slayer is a 1992 American comedy horror directed by Fran Rubel-Kazooie, right? And starring quite a few...
That's a cracking name.
Yeah, I know, right? And she's done a few little things before, but she's mostly famous for this. But this movie actually has, going through the list, quite a lot of famous people that I forgot were in it.
Yeah.
So Buffy's played by Christy Swanson. You also got Donald Sutherland. We've got Paul Rubens. You've got Rutger Hauer. You've got Luke Perry. You've got Hilary Swank in her first ever movie, in this case.
Yeah.
And also things like David Arquette and loads of other cameos.
Yeah, I mean, nowadays they're all sort of well-known sort of big hitters, aren't they? Like,
yeah. They're quite big. I mean, there are actually a surprising list of cameos in this movie. Mm. People who did turn up and people who... surprisingly, were supposed to turn up, but didn't last very long or couldn't have turned up. So, yeah. Okay, so another one. One is, for example, Ben Affleck appears in this movie.
I didn't even believe it. You were like, I swear that's Ben Affleck.
That's Ben Affleck.
Because he looks so young.
Yeah, it's like saying, oh, he's older. This is 1992. This happened. So Ben Affleck was in it. Okay, Ricky Lake.
What?
She's in it. She plays the waitress. She plays a waitress in a sequence.
All right, okay. I don't remember her.
I know, but that's because they're all hidden in the background, right? Mm. Also, Seth Green's in this movie for 3 seconds.
Right, okay.
He's the vampire with glasses on.
Yeah.
Which is great, because technically then he's starred in both Buffy's.
Mm.
This is a very interesting fact, right? So, Rutger Hauer in this movie plays the King of the Vampires, yeah?
King of Camp.
Yeah, the King of Camp. All right. There were quite a few people up for the role, right? Mm. And so I'm going to break down quickly who's actually in the running for this, okay? And you're not going to believe some of them, and I actually think these would have been legendary.
Right.
Okay. So first of all, you had Cary Elwes, who was basically, you know, from The Princess Bride and stuff like that. Mick Jagger.
Brilliant.
Mick Jagger could have been in it.
That would have been amazing.
Mick Jagger would have been King of the Vampires. And then, obviously, your favourite, David Bowie.
Really? Oh, God. Either of those two would have been so great.
I know.
Mick Jagger isn't the best actor. Bowie's better than Jagger.
Yeah, he is. But then I'm just having a thought of Mick Jagger swanting around as the King of the Vampires. But then they couldn't do it because of budget restraints. Mm. So then they tried to get all three of them as cameos as other vampires. But then... due to time, they couldn't do it. So this idea was completely scrapped. But my God, imagine, I wanted to see a vampire Mick Jagger.
Well, I can see why they wanted because they wanted someone with a lot of charisma, didn't they?
Yeah.
Because it's like, he's meant, in this version of Buffy, the main bad guy is, they're going for the charming, charismatic vampire, aren't they?
Yeah. But you see, Mick Jagger has a charm, but it's a different kind of charm.
Yeah.
It's kind of a really cocky swagger. It's not like, Rutger Hauer, who's trying to be charming and so camp.
And I don't know whether Mick Jagger could have faked that. He would have just been Mick Jagger.
He would have just been Mick Jagger. It's like, all right, love. Just shimmying away. So the movie itself got a lot of mixed criticism. Okay,
yeah.
So it was a mixed set of reviews, with at the moment on Rotten Tomatoes being 35% fresh. Mm. So it's not that good. No. So on average, it's about 4 out of 10.
Mm.
Nah. The consensus reads that Buffy the Vampire Slayer's supernatural coming-of-age tale is a letdown by poor directing and even poorer plotting, even though Paul Rubens and Kirsty Swanson's performances were still managed to slay. Oh, God. I love some of these.
They are the most, like, they do stand out the most, those two.
Yeah, they definitely are the ones that really have the most charisma in terms of, like, actually taking their role semi-seriously or having a bit of fun with it. And then, but then it got a little bit of more of a cult following once it appeared on home video.
Yeah.
But it only was until Buffy the TV show popped out. Then this movie kind of fell into obscurity because the TV show did so well, everyone started looking even worse at the movie and going, oh, it's not like the TV show.
Yeah. I mean, with the movie, for me, it was like the video was like a word of mouth video. Like people said, like in school, like if you've seen Buffy the Vampire Slayer, it's actually pretty cool. And then I watched it and like really I liked it at the time. But then obviously the TV show came about and it was like, this is amazing. So it just gone up a notch. I liked the movie, but didn't kind of like go mad for it.
Mm.
And then but I liked that idea.
Yeah.
And then, so then I was just like loving it when the TV show came along.
The TV show took it to like its ultimate conclusion, right? But this is the thing. It's all based around our hero, as it were, Josh Whedon. Because Josh Whedon, this was his baby from the get-go, right? Mm. But the movie itself, during production and a few other things, got a little pandered. Because the rights of Josh Whedon actually then sold the rights of the film to... Okay, this is random. He sold the rights to the movie to Dolly Parton's production company.
What?
Okay, so Dolly Parton actually has a production company, right? Who surprisingly did Buffy the Vampire Slayer, but also also helped out with things like 90210. It also helped out with all the Father of the Brides movies as well.
Okay. I'd love it if it's called Dolly Dearest.
Oh, no.
Dolly Dearest Productions.
Apparently, it's called Sand Dollar.
Okay.
Which is weird, all right? The production of the movie was only limited to 5 weeks to accommodate Luke Perry's 90210 filming schedule. So the filming was a bit tight and squeezed, right? Mm. So they had to be like a well-oiled machine to get this done. But Josh Whedon, once he wrote it and said that he was given the role of an advisory. So he was an advisor on set.
Mm.
Okay, early in production, but departed after becoming dissatisfied with the direction the film was taking. Yeah. Now, this was a combination of two different things. One, the executives from 20th Century Fox removed many of Whedon's jokes, believing the humor was too abstract for audiences. So too meta or too off-ball, right? Okay, and also the director actually then had to rewrite a lot of the script.
Right.
In order to make it worse. So at the end of it, it's like there are elements in there that are Josh Whedon, and you can see it in the movie.
Yeah.
But not the final sort of thing.
It hasn't got his sort of magic on it, is it? Has it? It's just little glimpses of him in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's exactly what it says here. Josh Whedon has expressed his disapproval for the movie's interpretation of the script from the get-go. Mm. And he stated, I finally sat down and had written it, and somebody had made it into a movie, and I felt, well, it's not quite her. It's a start, but it's not quite the girl I want.
Mm.
And I think we can agree with that. There are elements that's totally Buffy, but it isn't Buffy.
Yeah.
But this is the thing. The reason why it was dissatisfied, because the studios wanted to make it a little bit lighter.
Right.
Because apparently the script, the original script, was incredibly dark.
Well, the thing is with him, he wrote, like, Cabin in the Woods, didn't he?
Yeah.
And that's, like, a great example of him being allowed to make stuff really violent and kind of gory, but at the same time has all his humour in there. So I assume when he does like, a horror comedy movie, that's the kind of movie he wants to do, where he wants the full-on horror, but he also wants a comedy as well.
Yeah.
So maybe his script was a bit more light on those levels in terms of horror and comedy.
I think so. Yeah. I think it's that would have been the balance, because I've read some of the bits here. Okay, so it seems like the first half of the movie is pretty much accurate, but then some horrible shit happens, right, which later on becomes continuity for the TV show. So right. Number one. Okay, first of all, he kind of noticed, this is one thing I think I'll put a bit of a down in the movie. For a movie about vampires, the movie is surprisingly quite bloodless.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of blood.
No.
At all. Like, the only time I saw some genuine blood is on Buffy's arm after a fight. That is it.
Yeah, you think, like, because with vampires, you'd think you'd see blood, like, on like teeth and stuff and bite wounds and like
you barely
like,
see that, and then when you do, the lips just look like lipstick.
Yeah,
it's all the blood, but actually this is my favorite shade.
I thought it was quite a... I hate that look where... You know Rutger Hauer's character?
Yes.
He had, like, lipstick, but he had a moustache as well. Like, I hate the combination of moustaches and lipstick. It doesn't go together.
It looks so weird. It's like one of those... It's like a butch drag queen experimenting a little bit.
Because it was like... Because he's very blonde, isn't he? Yeah. So it's kind of like a blonde moustache and, like, red lips.
It doesn't work, mate. Does not work. All right. Two. Okay. Which I'm going to say all of this now. So by the time we get there, it's going to be things. So there was a suicide in the original script.
Oh my God.
Right. A suicide in the original script that would have propelled Buffy to being where she's supposed to be. Who happens to be Donald Sutherland's character, instead of dying, would have, in fact, have committed suicide instead.
Right. Is he a more depressive character in this original script?
Well, the idea is that he is trying to get Buffy to be the ultimate vampire slayer. Mm. But it's just not working because she's so, you know, defiant and so valley girl.
Yeah.
And then when the King of the Vampires shows up and shows how much, like, he's so easily to lure her, He thinks in order to sort of do that or whatever it is, he feels like he's not up to the task of actually training Buffy to be the best vampire slayer, so he kills himself.
Right, okay.
Which propels then Buffy to actually step up her game. Mm. But holy hell! And then on top of that, the last bit at the end is the whole prom sequence. The whole bit in the prom is there was no, like, big epic fight or the bit in the prom or whatever. The original script had Buffy burning down the entire school gym.
Yeah. Oh, and that's continuity in the TV series, isn't
yes.
it? They talk about that, yeah.
Yeah, but that means she killed all the vampires as well as everyone in the gym. Mm. So, yeah.
Because I did wonder about that, because when I watched the TV series, I was expecting continuity from the movie, but it wasn't there.
No, but apparently it's the thing. The TV show is continuity from the original film script.
Right, cool.
So they took a lot of elements from the original film script to keep the whole thing going, yeah? Mm. And they did change things, obviously, from the TV show, but things like burning down an entire high school gym to kill an army of vampires, yep, that stayed in. So Joss Whedon eventually left set, just walked off the movie. Mm. Like, a bit through. And he blames three things. One, the director rewriting the most of the script in order to keep the executives happy.
Yeah.
Cut down a lot of the... Change a lot of the jokes, which some of the jokes do land, and I can see how some of them were still Joss Whedon's. But then there's a few that are basically now... It goes to the other end, to pure slapstick.
Mm.
Okay?
Yeah.
Number two... Donald Sutherland's behaviour on set is... I love it. Joss Whedon describes him as being a bit of a dick.
Right.
All right? Because apparently Donald Sutherland had sort of a thing of improvising or altering his lines to the script.
Yeah.
Quite often. Which the director allowed to do freely because, obviously, he is the most high-profile star in the movie.
Mm.
But which means that when Whedon felt like most of the Merrick's lines and dialogue were felt disjointed and unintelligible by the end of it, because he was just making up garbage and sounding like something from someone from a completely different movie.
Mm.
So he hated that.
Yeah.
Okay. And then on top of that, just in general, like having the majority of his film just sort of pushed aside and slaughtered around all over the place. So those are sort of his main cruxes: the director, the rewrites, and Donald Sutherland.
It seemed like the director was a bit of a pushover, to be honest. Like was it the first movie or something? Or
No. She did a few movies beforehand.
Right,
but she's famed for this.
Yeah. Okay. Because it just seems like she let the executive just have their input, and Donald Sutherland let him do what he wants.
Yeah.
Didn't really push it in terms of what the original, you know, thing was.
Yeah, I think that's the case. Like, I think maybe the director didn't really like the vision in the first place and had to put her stamp on things. But it's what's so funny is that later on she's credited in nearly every single Buffy TV show. But that's nothing to do with the fact that she's done absolutely nothing for the TV show. She just put it there because of the fact that he wants to have a constant reminder. It's because of her movie that for some reason, Joss Whedon had to go back and do it better.
Yeah.
So every time you see her name in the credits, you watch it. She's under a credit in in every episode of Buffy. But that's just a reminder to everyone. And Joss Whedon is like, your piece of shit made me have to redo this again.
Yeah.
Wow. So
yeah, but the thing is, though, would have the TV series come up? Would it have happened if the movie hadn't happened?
That's the question.
Mm.
But that's the thing. What if the darker version of the movie happened? Right. And it wasn't a success, we wouldn't have had Buffy. Mm. So it feels almost like this is all this, even though this movie is considered a mess and not very good or anything else, this did lead to a far better product. That's almost iconic with the late 90s, early noughties. I mean, Buffy was the thing. If you didn't watch Buffy or Angel, you were like, what's wrong with you? Mm. You know, Joss Whedon's famous for like the whole continuity sort of, you need to be in it, references, and you've got to be involved in the universe and stuff like that.
I even had like... I wore like a long coat and had the hair like Angel and stuff.
Oh no, really?
Yeah.
Oh my god, you were an Angel follower.
Yeah.
I always liked Spike more.
Yeah, Spike was cool.
This is
Rutger Hauer.
Rutger Hauer, the king of the vampires. I think Rutger Hauer is a good choice being the king of the vampires.
You'd assume
he'd be. You look at his face and you say, like, you know what? Yeah, you're royalty to some capacity.
This is another example of, like, this happens in all American stuff, but they look so much older than high school age.
Yeah, because they look like in their mid to late 20s.
Apart from, like, some of the girls don't, but, like, the male actors always look so much older.
And that's why they always hide out with jocks. Oh, there he is!
Oh my god. You can't have sexy Pee Wee Herman.
You can't have sexy Pee Wee Herman. What didn't he get caught like masturbating in a cinema once?
Yeah, exactly. That's why you
can't get away with it. Oh my god. I know. It's just weird seeing Pee Wee Herman just try to be sexy. Hi!
Yeah, he is probably that man. He's probably the most sexless person ever,
and yet he is a sexy vampire in this. How does that work? I am loving Rutger Hauer's lair. It is amazing. It is so goth, and he's got a tiny violin, and he's wearing puffy shirts. Oh my god, he is the man. Rutger Hauer underneath a giant statue of a flying Pegasus. If his campus hasn't raised to 11 now, it is super.
With pink smoke.
Pink smoke and lipstick. Look at him, he's so fabulous. Fur coat helps too.
We're talking about Buffy being the vampire slayer, but who is she supposed to be fighting? She's supposed to fight Lovos. The King of the Vampires, played by Rutger Hauer.
Yeah.
Who is, personally, is my favourite character in the movie for the fact that he is the campest. He's walking around in capes, playing a violin, you know, holding roses. He is just so romantic camp.
He's like, reminds me of like Morrissey or something.
Morrissey as a vampire. That's kind of awesome.
I mean, he doesn't look anything like Morrissey, but his behaviour is.
His mannerisms.
Bit, yeah.
And his also introduced to his sidekick, which is basically Pee Wee Herman. But Paul Rubens, basically.
It's such a bizarre casting to have Paul Rubens meant to be the sexy vampire. It's just
he's
odd.
Supposed to be the sexy vampire. But it's not the sexy vampire.
And he's got this really odd kind of, like, metal hair, like rock star hair.
Yeah, he's a little bit like sexy hair metaler kind of thing, yeah? Like he's trying to do. Like he's got metal hair, he's got the leather jacket and stuff like that. And he's like, you know what? I can see what you're going to do with it, but it's Paul Rubin. It's Pee Wee Herman. It doesn't work. It feels odd. But here's an interesting fact. Originally... that role was supposed to be played by a woman.
Okay.
It was supposed to be a female character played by Joan Chen, but she pulled out, so it was rewritten as a male character. But then this makes me even more think, again, out of all the choices, you had time to change it. Why Pee-wee Herman?
I think they just perhaps wanted to push the comedy like this. It seems that they're really going for comedy in the movie. And they know that he's a funny guy. So,
but what's actually interesting, again, playing for the camp value, both of those characters, you've got Paul Reubens and Rutger Hauer, they play a little bit like a couple. I think that might not even be from the original script, or just because they're so camp together. It's just hilarious.
Well, if she was meant to be female, I suppose they were meant to be a couple, maybe in the original script.
But the way when they say it to each other, now you got Paul Reubens and Rutger Hauer saying it to each other, dressed in the most like early 90s goth, and just saying we need to get the Slayer. Oh, darling, sort this out for me. You know, it just feels so off and campy. It's laughable.
Yeah. They showed the original script was darker.
Yes.
I'm wondering whether the main villain was meant to be a bit more like the master in the TV series. You know,
maybe.
Because he's still a charismatic, like, you can still draw people with that. He's what are they called? Glamouring, isn't it? Like,
yes.
He can still do that, but he's scary, isn't he? He's not like sort of camp or fabulous.
Come to me.
He's just, he can like really, he can hypnotise Buffy.
Yeah.
But he's scary.
Yes. Yeah. So yeah, that's the thing that's missing. There's an intimidation factor that's a bit missing. Because Rutger Hauer, who's supposedly the big honcho cheese, is so campy, you can't really take him seriously much. He doesn't seem ever like a real threat.
No.
Okay, let's break down the plot. So, the plot itself is very sort of bog standard, but it feels like there are definitely some key moments in the movie that really stand out. And what I kind of love at the very beginning, the movie opens with a medieval setting, which is... Did not expect that. And I love it because the title says Europe, the Dark Ages.
Just somewhere in Europe.
Somewhere in Europe. It doesn't say where in Europe. Where it is just all of Europe. Yeah. That's where this is. And what you see is Donald Sutherland and Christy Swanson being their roles, but this time in a medieval setting.
Yeah.
Which starts to bring up the idea that these characters are constantly being reincarnated every time. So they're reincarnated, there's always a Slayer, there's always a Watcher, and there's always the King of the Vampires, and they have to keep doing this dance forever and ever and ever until something gets done. Which basically says all the other Buffys were a bit naff.
Yeah.
All the other Slayers were naff.
It's funny because it's like... It's a reincarnation thing, but like obviously it looks like the same people.
Yeah.
But I suppose that's just because it's a dream. If it was like a real, in reality, it would have been a different person.
But I think it's maybe also for the audience to say like, hey, you see him? Yeah, he'll appear later in the movie, and it'll be really weird when he appears. Mm. Yeah, like everyone appears in this. All of them do. All the main hitters appear in this. Or Paul Reubens appears, and you know Rutger Hauer appears, and everyone's sort of there reincarnated as this main four people that constantly are in a loop. But it does. I'll admit the medieval setting looks quite shit.
Yeah, very sort of cheap, doesn't it? Cheap looking.
Yeah, it looks...
Thrown together.
It's thrown together just like saying, oh, this looks medieval. Right, wear this. You wear a wig. But I love this bit, the very beginning of it. Didn't she just literally... Because one of the vampires just disappears down the stairs. And so Buffy... Well, I'm saying... Yeah, Buffy. Buffy, medieval Buffy, jumps out a window and lands on a horse.
And proper, pancakes the horse. I don't think that didn't like actually harm the horse there.
I was kind of worried about her because if she landed on a horse, imagine someone jumping and landing on a horse.
Well, I think it was a stunt woman.
Well, even still, poor stunt lady.
They can handle it.
They can handle it. Are your ribs okay?
Yeah.
I'm fine. Oh, this is just a regular Tuesday.
For me, it was a Tuesday.
Oh no, we're bringing it up again. And then, oh no. Oh god, I think Raul Julia would have made it way too more hammy if we put him in the movie.
Oh, he would be a good vampire though. I mean, he's already there a little bit with Gomez, isn't he?
Yeah, he's like a bit there. So now, just a... just more hammy up. Actually, I think Rutger Hauer appears, and here he's not the full-blown vampire as we like at the minute, but he is quite campy.
Yeah.
And he comes really campy later.
He just looks like he's having a lot of fun with it.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. I think, again, he's like, Rutger has, oh, this is a lot of fun, isn't it? And the director's like, you need to be serious here. Please be serious. It's like, I am being serious. Seriously fun. And he's just having a whale of a time.
Yes.
Good grief. Oh man, 20th Century Fox. Man.
There's a version of that on YouTube where someone's used those, you know, those little like plastic like sort of, what are they called? Like
a kazoo.
Yeah, kazoos. Yeah, they've played it on that, on those, and it's just hilarious.
Oh my god, an army of kazoos. Oh, I like that. Oh my god. These people have terrible cinema etiquette. My god, shut up. I'm watching a movie. Oh no. I can't
believe these people. Good David Arquette.
Look at Arquette.
Why has David Arquette always got that face like, it's really fucking bright in here?
He looks like, oh.
Like a bit like Clint Eastwood does. Like.
Clint Eastwood always looks like he's looking through you because yeah. He's just squinting at you and everything. Like he can't see beyond his face.
You can see like the difference in fashions of the, you've got like the. They're like the grunge, kind of.
Yeah, they're grunge. And David Arquette's got the one earring.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, this is so 90s. It actually hurts.
You know, on a picture of the Earth, how do you not tread on the Earth? I mean, you kind of have to, right?
God's sake, she's so dumb in this.
It's also, she's so dumb, it's almost slightly profound.
Yeah.
It's like, don't tread on me. And it's like, a picture of the Earth. Well, you kind of have to.
So then, once that sequence happens, there's little moments throughout the movie where, at the first half of the movie at least, where they flash back to this, to insinuate that this is happening. But then, we cut to modern day, and we literally are cut to Buffy
cheerleading
right there in the gym doing the whole thing with the most 90s of soundtracks, which we have to drop a minute. What a soundtrack.
Yeah, when we watch the credits at the end, we're seeing who was on the soundtrack, and there's just some really well-known big songs and stuff. Well, at least maybe the songs weren't that well-known, but the artists
were well-known. Like, I mean, the first song opened, the movie basically opens up to CNC Sound, the Music Factory.
Yeah.
So like, oh, okay. So we got that, and the music keeps really, really pushes the 90s. Now, to me, it's not like famous songs, but like this sounds 90s as hell.
Yeah, definitely.
So that, I think there's one thing we have to mention. Because this movie is based like in the early 90s, you're going to have a shit ton of 90s nostalgia watching this movie.
Definitely.
Like the outfits, the setting, the slang. Oh, the slang. I didn't even understand half the words they were saying, but they're like, oh my God, Valley Girl slang. Watch your damage. Oh God. I mean, I can't even understand half the words they were saying. They were talking gibberish to me.
Yeah.
But proper 90s slang throughout. And you got Buffy doing the cheerleading, and then she's joined by the other three sort of dim-witted girls. One played by Hilary Swank. Which, again, I was surprised this is her first ever movie.
Yeah.
This is the thing. At the very beginning, this is probably one of the reasons why a lot of Buffy the Vampire Slayer fans maybe do not like this movie. Because at the very beginning of the movie, Buffy is a total airhead.
Yeah.
A complete fucking dimwit who you kind of makes you think, is this an act because they're popular? Or is she literally this dumb?
Yeah, my memory of the movie was I thought that there was a lot more of that. My memory of it was she was like an airhead, a Valley Girl airhead.
The entire time?
Or for at least a long period of the movie. I was quite surprised that it's just really the beginning part, really, isn't it?
It's only the first maybe 20 minutes. Because then once she realises she's a Slayer, she focuses more and she's no longer that dumb anymore. Like, all her dumb quips stop completely.
And I think that works in a movie because she's got quite a strong arc, hasn't she?
Yeah. She's hardened. She literally hates... Her current boyfriend and hates the stupid girls for being like, you know, there's actual real important things in life, like killing vampires.
Yeah.
You know?
And that's just like a metaphor for like growing up, isn't it? You start to realise there's bigger things that are more important like, in life.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Again, looking back at it, the movie is basically about once you realise that high school's actually a bit shit and nothing in high school really matters, like a senior prom dance. No one really cares how great the dance is or whatever. You have a memory, but you're not going to say, like, that this is the most important thing ever. Like, you wish, this needs to be the best dance ever, right? No one cares, because in the grand scheme of life, vampires are coming, basically. Then we're introduced to some of the other characters, like all the Valley Girls are in the cinema, just being Valley Girls talking throughout the movie. Interrupt, and this is when we're introduced to the late Luke Perry and David Arquette, who I'm very surprised he was in this movie, and I'm not sure if I like him or not.
No, I think he's quite forgettable in this movie.
He's quite forgettable. I don't think as an actor he was pretty good in this, and I'm not sure whether, again, he's just eating up that campy ham that this movie is serving on a hot plate.
Yeah, he's chowing down on it, isn't he?
He is. Because it's like, he does eventually become a vampire later on in the movie. And I'm not sure if he's taking it as seriously or as enjoying it. Because, again, the lighter tone and the combined with some of the really sort of serious moments makes this movie kind of muddled. You're not sure whether that is a conscious choice or because they're just letting the actors run wild and free and go, I'm a vampire. Yeah, basically.
Also, the vampires, they don't look at all scary in this movie.
They just got a bit of contact lenses and fangs in them.
Yeah, the ears are kind of like pointy, but they're kind of like almost like elf ears. They're kind of like flappy, aren't they?
Like Vulcan.
Yeah, Vulcan. Right?
Oh my god, Spock is a vampire. Basically, he's like, live long and prosper. I'll also need to suck your blood. That is highly logical.
Yeah, and they can float, can't they? Which is a bit weird.
They can float, which I find kind of cool, because they don't fly, they just float.
Yeah.
Like, the bit is when Luke Perry and David Arquette, they're like buddy out, they hang out, they get drunk. And then David Arquette gets bitten and becomes a vampire. I love the bit because Luke Perry's sort of like drunk in his house, gets out of bed hungover and looks out the window and says, and David Arquette sort of like, and say like, let me in, man. Let me in. I'm hungry. Let me in, man. Please. We can be fun. And then Luke, I love Luke to say like, it's like, and Luke's basically, what the hell, man? You're floating.
He's like, I love the way he delivers that line because he like goes, you're floating. Come on.
Like, how am I going to let you in? You're floating.
It's great. It's really funny. See, I like Luke Perry in this movie because he is funny. He is a funny character.
Yeah, it is funny. And I think this is the point of the movie. If you see the movie as a comedy more than a Buffy movie, like if comparing it to that, the movie's quite fun.
Yeah.
And you have a good time with it if you don't take it seriously and have a bit of fun with it. But if you start taking it seriously, you go, oh, this is now actually quite stupid and this is not fun anymore.
Mm.
Yeah.
Excuse much, rude or anything?
Wow.
He looks like a pervert.
Look, the lighting makes him moody. Like this, I think, like Donald's everywhere he goes, moody lighting follows. Well, look at all that.
It's like this stranger just walks in the school.
Stranger danger.
Where did you come from? impressive. The tumbling.
What? Oh. I used to do gymnastics. Are you looking for somebody?
I was looking for you, actually.
Pervert!
Why? Am I in trouble or something? Because if I am, I didn't do it.
All right.
Oh.
So you come with me now.
He's caressing something in his hand as well.
Yeah, it's like saying, like, come with me now and I'm going to show you something. Creepy!
God, what's your damage?
So, Donald Sutherland versus Anthony Stewart Head.
Yes.
Which one?
Oof.
Thing is, I mean, Anthony Stewart Head got to explore the character much more because he was in the whole TV series.
Yes.
But Donald Sutherland does a really good watcher.
He does, but he's screaming Stranger Danger.
Yeah.
Really screaming. He's not really selling himself well as the teacher of the second coming of the vampire slayers.
He's not like nerdy, is he? Like,
nah.
It was because Anthony Stewart Head's character, like Giles, was like a proper bookworm type guy.
Yeah, he was a professor.
Well, at first, anyway. Like, then obviously you got to know more about the character later on.
But he was a history buff. He knew everything.
This is where we're first introduced to Donald Sutherland, who always seems to have moody lighting follow him everywhere he goes.
Yeah, he's quite creepy.
Yes, he is. So Donald Sutherland is the watcher. And he definitely watches, because he watches her from a distance, really creepily.
Yeah.
Like, this is literally...
just lurking in the background with, like, film noir lighting.
All the time. Because he's also wearing the same outfit everywhere. He doesn't change his clothes.
And the thing is, sometimes he's, like, training with Buffy. And he's running around and he's kind of, like, exercising. And you think you'd take off a few layers for that.
He's still wearing a trench coat and fedora the entire time. And you're sort of thinking, like, is this literally the only outfit he owns?
Is this the costume budget? Because they only have that costume for him or something.
Yeah, maybe that's it.
Just take a layer off.
Take off the trench coat if you're going to have complete combat training. It just looks really weird. It just looks like you're creepy. It just looks like that creepy guy who hangs out in parks.
Yeah.
Randomly just walking into a school without any permission or security or anything else. Donald Sutherland appears in a puff of, almost like in a puff of smoke, it feels like. Because he just appears again, like from the corner of his eye, going, where have you? He's like, I'm watching you. Yes, of course, you're watching me, like a pervert.
Yeah.
And then introduces himself to Buffy and says, like, you have to understand, you are the chosen one. You know, you're the chosen one, and I'm here to train you. And the way he talks sounds really odd. And I'm not sure whether it was done on purpose to make it sound like Stranger Danger, basically. Yeah. Which is like, now, come with me tonight. Come with me tonight in a graveyard, and I will show you something. That sounds like a bad time waiting to happen.
I don't know how he convinces her. I can't remember what does he say to make her do it. Like,
he says, basically, you're having these weird dreams of you being like in a Victorian era, aren't you? Or you being in like in a medieval time, and you were a slave, and you were all these in different times.
He convinces her because he says things that only she hasn't told to anybody.
Yeah, the dreams. Yeah. It's like saying, I keep having these weird dreams, but, you know, that's not the case, right?
There he is. Oh, he's coming out. Oh, zoom in!
Wow!
Buffy! Help! Oh my god! I'm stuck in a tussle! Oh no! Do something! Use your gymnastics! Yeah! This fight seems actually, just looking more at it, it just seems more and more pathetic. Oh, there's another one behind you!
The music in that scene was really odd.
Yeah, it seemed like, I'm so overdramatic, but then the fight was so lame looking. It's like, I'm rolling in the mud.
Finally, they said, fine, I'll come over. I'll do the thing. And you can see, like, I do not believe I'm so going to be like, I don't believe I'm now in a graveyard with a random stranger on a school night. Oh, no, basically. And so this is where he first introduced the concept of vampires.
Mm.
I mean, this whole sequence of the graveyard, this is the thing. This is where I start thinking, like, the fight scenes are a little bit disappointing in this movie.
Yeah, they're kind of, like, just wrestling with them. I know they're not, I mean, they're still, Buffy's still sort of getting to grips with knowing that she can fight them.
Yeah.
And Donald Sutherland's character, he hasn't got any powers or anything, so he would struggle to fight them, I suppose, as well. Mm. But you'd think he'd have, after all those years, he'd have a bit of a clue how to fight them.
Yeah!
Because what's odd is Luke Perry seems to be able to fight vampires better than, what's his name?
Yeah,
Matt Valick or something. What's his name?
What, Merrick?
Merrick, yeah.
Merrick.
He doesn't seem to be able to fight vampires at all, and he should have, he's only human, but he should have experience.
This is the thing. He actually says to Buffy, he's like, I am not a slayer. It's like, I'm only here to train. But it's like, even if you're not a slayer, mate, you should know what you're doing because you're training them.
I mean, he would have still had to get his hands dirty in fights and stuff because he's the watcher, you know, and he's always involved, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Always involved. So in other words, the first vampire comes out of the grave. It's like fresh meat. Died 3 days ago, mysteriously. And so, like, and it's, I'm almost, like, waiting. It's like, the grave's been overturned, as you can see, so they'll be ready to pounce any minute. And he's just staring at it, and then the vampires come out like zombies in sort of, like, a lame way, like, ugh. And then they fight, but it's literally rolling in the mud.
Mm. It's a bit of a mud wrestle.
It is a bit of a mud wrestle, and it's a bit, like, come on! Like, Buffy the TV series actually became quite renowned for having really cool fight sequences.
Yeah, everyone knows, like, kung fu.
Everyone seems to know some kind of kung fu.
Yeah.
Like I said, everyone knows how to do a flying kick. Everyone knows how to do really cool, like, drop kicks and chops and punches and all that kind of stuff.
They in the TV series, they do make jokes about the vampire. As soon as you become a vampire, you know how to do martial arts. They make jokes about it, don't they? Like,
yeah, they do. They sort of, like, say, like, it's like, I didn't know how I could fight that until a vampire showed up. So, by this point, that means Paul Reubens now going on like this sort of rampage of trying to get, you know, feasting for blood, trying to lure out the vampire slayer, right? Which Buffy is actually slowly but surely getting better. There's like two training montages that really show that she's actually surprisingly good. And,
yeah.
And there's one cool bit where there's two cool bits that show that she has pinpoint accuracy, where there's a bit where the where for no fucking reason, Donald Sutherland just throws a knife at her and just grabs it.
Catches it with both hands. And
yeah.
Like that.
And so only the chosen one could have done that. So only the chosen one. Then he's like, here's the question. What if she wasn't the chosen one and just threw a knife at her?
Well, that's what she says in the scene, doesn't she? Yeah, but you threw a knife at me. Come on.
Please.
Yeah. And the other bit is in that discussion in the office with the teacher.
Yes.
She is a fly, isn't there?
Yeah.
She throws like a drawing pin. And it pins it to the wall.
But it doesn't throw it. She spits it.
That's it, yeah.
She puts it in her mouth and just goes, and says, pins a fly at the back of the wall. That is, Mr. Miyagi would have been really impressed.
Definitely.
So she has, this. She's, maybe the whole point of the movie to a point, that she's always had these abilities, which shows for it. Because at the very beginning at one point, when the Valley Girls are being molested by Luke Perry and David Arquette in the cafeteria.
Mm.
Like, for no reason, and we'd never seen this before, we've never seen her do anything like this before, she grabs a knife and slices a hot dog in half through the middle.
Yeah, you don't actually see it, but you see the result.
Which I know what it's trying to say. It's like, you know, I'll chop your pecker off. But the
right down the centre.
Talk about a split.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
There is one thing.
Did he just stroke his mustache?
He did.
Whoa!
You threw a knife at my head.
Caught it. Only the chosen one could have caught it.
Don't you get it? I don't want to be the chosen one. I don't want to spend the rest of my life chasing after vampires. All I want to do is graduate from high school, go to Europe, marry Christian Slater, and die.
Christian Slater.
Oh, my God.
90s hunk.
He was a 90s hunk. What happened to him?
It was necessary.
Last night you knew I was sitting in a fresh grave, didn't you?
Yes, because I had to make you aware of the
implication. Damn!
Oh. I had never hit anybody before.
Oh. Really? I did it perfectly.
You did it perfectly fine.
I didn't break a nail.
Yeah! When does she get all the all this stuff? Oh, there she go. Ha!
That's a... Doesn't Donald ever take any layers off? He's just like always.
He's always in a trench coat, which is why he's the epitome of stranger danger. No wonder he looked like a creepy pervert.
You'd think when he was helping her with training, he would at least be in just a shirt or something, like shirt and tie.
At least put on a tracksuit. Oh, close but not close enough. Right in the knee. Yes. Yeah, look at that kick. Oh, sponsorship, clearly.
Yeah.
Vampire Slaying,
sponsored by Nike.
Remember?
When do I meet this guy?
Isn't the heart more central? He was like...
I was. It's the heart in the center, but a little off. So it's about
but
here.
He was like pointing it like at his nipple.
Again, stranger danger. Maybe just saying like, here's my nipple. Give it a stroke.
Nice conversationalist. Yeah, I felt them a little. But I'm not due for another couple of weeks since you're so hot on the subject.
Of course you're not. It was a natural reaction on the part of a slayer. A reaction to their unnaturalness. And you're going to be able to use that to track them.
Great.
So...
My secret weapon is PMS. This is terrific. Thank you.
It's not a weapon.
Weaponized PMS. Well, think about it though, as a vampire, right? You know, vampires smell blood, right? So, no, I just had a thought. No, I realized what I just was about to say. Ew!
Basically, the slaying wins at this point. She takes far more time slaying than ever does in high school. And so she gets called into the principal's office. at one point. And you can see how Buffy's just like, I'm just tired. I'm just tired. And then the principal goes over to her and says, it's drugs, isn't it? It's drugs, isn't it?
He just starts talking about dropping acid and stuff in the 60s. And
yeah, it's like, I was in NAM. I was in NAM. We tried everything. It's like weird, sort of creepy trip. And I can't remember the story because it's so incoherent.
Yeah. And she's, Buffy's not really listening to him. And we're not really listening to him.
Because Buffy's not really listening to him.
Yeah.
And I think this is where, you know, where we talked about how some of the things were clearly improvised. This is clearly a moment where I think it's improvised. Like, because the guy's talking nonsense.
Yeah.
Legit nonsense. And you know when you're not a very good improviser, you just start throwing things at the wall and hope what sticks.
Mm.
I think this is a segment where I think this is where some of the movie sort of falls. Some of the really bad improvised moments.
Yeah, I mean, you're supposed to be talking about, like, sort of hippie kind of behaviour, so I suppose it was the only way you'd get away with that. But at the same time, the character seems like he wasn't really, like, a big sort of drug-taking hippie. He's just kind of pretending it's like an act.
Yeah, it does feel like
he's
an
trying
act.
He's saying it to be cool, isn't he? Like,
yeah, I think it's so. I think he's trying to act like, he actually says, like, I'm down with the youth, bro, or whatever it is.
Whereas in reality, I think he probably, like, he maybe did drugs one time or something.
He smoked a joint once, hated it, and now he's recalling all of these accounts he's making up, saying, yeah, I totally did cocaine once. Yeah, I totally did LSD once. And, like, I'm not even sure, man. I think it's all lies. Maybe the secret is he's always high, and we don't know.
Anyway, he's a quite annoying character, to be fair.
He only appears three times in the movie, and every time he's annoying. So maybe you can start seeing where some of the criticisms kicks in. But that's the thing, is when we watched it, I think we ignored it. I think some of the bits that are annoying can actually be quite easily ignored.
Remember, you're special. He certainly looks special with his pointy ears.
You are special to me. It's like, did you do something with your face? No, it's fine. I just stay up all night and suck blood. Of course he floats down, but no one's noticing. Ben Affleck! Oh, hello!
That's not him.
That is Ben Affleck.
It looks like him, but that's not Ben Affleck.
That's so Ben Affleck, though! I'm convinced that is Ben Affleck. I'm gonna find out. Uh-oh.
I think Ben Affleck would be a little bit older.
Isn't everybody?
Yeah. I'm telling the world.
I'm telling the world that you're a dyke. What? What a bunch of sexist pigs.
Now that is a cool image. Cheerleader on a Harley Davidson.
Harley Davidson, yeah. That is quite awesome. This is the thing, this movie is now, looking back at it now, actually, it's actually not that bad. This is actually not a bad choice. For a trash tape, actually, this is a good movie. I don't think we're going to have a lot to talk about.
After all this, he's done all the training, so like, and Buffy's saying, I have to go to this game. I've already missed three cheerleading sessions, and I have to go to this, otherwise people are going to get suspicious. So she goes to the game, does the whole cheer. He's like, okay, da-da-da-da-da, and not really good cheer, actually. No. But then we notice that one of the basketball players is a vampire.
This section reminds me a bit like Teen Wolf, because in Teen Wolf, you got the werewolf, he turns into a werewolf.
Yeah.
Like, on the basketball court.
Yes.
So you've got, it's a bit of a similar sequence. Obviously, In this, though, it's a vampire and he's a bad guy.
Yes.
But it reminded me so much of that scene, like basketball and a monster, you know.
Yeah, and it's always like the monster's always really good at sport.
Yeah.
Like, all the time. Like, this is the thing. He does a really good slam dunk. Because he's a vampire, right? Instead of falling down, he floats down and nobody notices this. It's like, ooh, that's a bit weird, isn't it?
Yeah, they're just like, oh, that's pretty cool. It's just something that he can do, obviously.
Obviously, he can fall down slowly, which is hilarious. He just floats down.
He does train very hard.
I think that was the line. Oh, he's doing really well. But then obviously Buffy notices this. And Buffy goes and literally goes into the basketball, trips him down, trying to stab him quickly. And then the game's obviously put on a halt. The vampire, so he runs out. And now he's being chased by other vampires. So they're all, so all the vampires are running around the streets, are chasing around, that kind of thing. And there's a random bits like, ooga booga, and like just runs around scaring other people.
And what's interesting, this is in the movie and it's in the TV show, is usually if someone starts becoming heroic in a situation like fighting a monster.
Yeah.
Usually in a story, people would praise them. Then they'd be like, "Oh, like this guy, this person's amazing. They can fight like that." In Buffy, she's alienated, isn't she?
They always
think that she's a bit weird, that she's got her powers. She's like, she's a freak kind of thing.
I mean, that's the thing. I would say like, oh my God, you can fight like that and you fight vampires? Yeah. Be my friend!
And I just thought that was kind of interesting and perhaps maybe realistic as well, because people might, in real life, they'd think you were really like freakish if you could fight like that. Like,
I think, and also it's because maybe they don't want to believe the reason why they're fighting them.
Yeah.
Because it's like saying, how do you get so good at fighting? Mm. And it's the truth. It's like maybe you can say, oh, you're really good at fighting. Like, are you so good at it? Obviously, because there's a whole legion of vampires I need to kill off. If you tell that to any random schmo, he's like,
and it's like they are scared of her, aren't they?
Yeah, they're like, yeah. I think it's like she's very intimidating. Mm. And you can see how she gets quite intimidating throughout. Like, she starts, like, for example, when the boyfriend, who I can't remember his name because he's actually like a nothing character, like Buffy's original boyfriend, like always at the beginning, it's like, oh, let me protect you kind of thing. When Buffy now knows how to kick butt, she's like, she sort of says, I'm fine, thank you, I can do it myself. And the boyfriend's like, well, clearly.
Yeah, and there's that bit where the friend of the boyfriend grabs her ass.
Yes.
And she flips him over.
That was so awesome, though. Because this movie, another thing you can say, this movie has a subtle layer of sexism.
Yeah.
But in a way that it's done to, like, stop. To say, like, sexism is wrong.
Yeah.
Like, the idea, because every time, you know, someone grabs Buffy's butt, Buffy goes, whoa, I'm frozen, but don't do that, you pervert.
Yeah.
Because in other, like 80s and 90s movies, a lot of that stuff was kind of surprisingly tolerated.
Mm.
And so this one saw, like, a subtle layer of, like, you know what, don't be a pervert. Like, wasn't there, like, another bit where she's right, there's a really cool sequence, this is of when she's chasing the vampire towards the, like, the weird fairground area.
Mm.
And, She's running past these bunch of bikers, and one of the bikers says, like, say,
you want to feel some real power between your legs?
Yes! And then literally you just see her stopping, turns, punches a guy in the face, and knocks him out and steals his Harley Davidson.
Yeah, and that's an awesome image where she's got cheerleader outfit on a massive motorbike.
She looks so badass.
And there's a few iconic, well, I think of iconic Buffy, a few images in this movie, like that's one of them. And there's the leather jacket over the prom dress, which and the stake in hand. This early on, like Buffy visuals, like established in the movie, like
I think, and that's what's good about this film. It's like I think this film needs to be it needs to be revised again, and we'll go talk into reasons why later. But this movie definitely needs to be looked at again and say, like, actually, it's not that shit. Just tone it down a bit.
Yeah.
Oh, that is
pretty creepy, actually.
That is really creepy. Oh, yeah, that's pretty fucking creepy, actually. I mean, wouldn't you be creeped out suddenly? You're going to bed and Rutger Hauer's right there.
Yeah.
Sweetie, you'll be late for school. Are we having a night?
Yes! He looks like a magician. This is one of my many magic tricks. I can pull a rabbit out of a hat.
Yeah, they're very much going for like the cliche vampires in this, aren't they?
Totally. They're not going for it. This is before the cool vampires really kicked in, you know? Mm.
She's riding a Harley Davidson, goes towards this sort of fairground, sort of like whatever it is, because there's loads of like floats and stuff, isn't there? Mm. And this is where they finally meet, like, this is where she finally meets properly for the first time Rutger Hauer. But there's a really cool, really creepy sequence we missed out before where she's having a dream, or it seems like a dream, where she goes to bed. And do you remember, she's in a pyjama, she crawls into bed, and then Rutger Hauer's in bed.
Yeah, it's very creepy. It's great, though. It's like got that, it's that traditional sort of vampire, sort of charming vampire kind of scare, isn't it? Where it's like he's like a almost... like a love interest for him in a weird way. Like,
yeah.
But only from sort of his perspective.
Because he's dressed like in a proper vampire, really like formal garb. Mm. But what's even creepier is like Buffy, this is before Buffy realised she's a Slayer properly. She's dressed like a little girl almost, because she's like in the nighty and she's got the bow on her head. Yeah. And she crawls into bed like this, holding like a teddy. And basically what she's doing is like she's crawling into bed in between Rutger Hauer's legs, curled up like this, and falling asleep, and Rutger Hauer's like her pillow. And that is a really uncomfortable, kind of cool, dark image. And that's saying, like, imagine the rest of the movie was a bit like that.
Yeah.
Rutger Hauer lures her in and say, like, come to me. Come to me, my love. Come to me. You know, with hypnotic powers and stuff.
Yeah, it's very much the traditional... what you think of, like... when you think of, like, sort of Dracula charming people and stuff, like in maybe like in the 90s version of Dracula and stuff like that.
Like the Bela Lugosi as well, yeah. Kind of thing. Like, look, if Dracula looks at you in your eyes and says a couple of lines, you're almost instantly smitten.
It's very much sort of that vibe going on.
Mm. And this is the thing, like Merrick shows up at that point and notices that Buffy's very instantly being like lured to her. So it's like, she's not, and it's like, come to me. And then he's almost thinking, like, you're not strong enough yet. It's like, Merrick, you've arrived. Oh, you haven't done nothing to her yet. She's so easily swayed. I want to fight, kind of thing. And so he literally just stakes him in the heart. Like, so, and Merrick just dies. Mm. Like, quite.
Which seems very sudden.
Yes.
It's like, you don't see... I mean, you'd expect the trainer, like the watcher, to be in the film for longer training her.
Yeah.
But he seems like he's just getting into it, and then he pops off.
And then just dies. And I think this is what the thing could have been. If the watcher was a better fighter and has to fight off... Lothos to be off Buffy, and then realises that I fail... and then this is where the suicide thing could have come in. It's like, I failed you. You're not ready. No, you're right. I don't think you'll ever be ready. And then disappears in the night. And it's like, I haven't heard. And it goes back, and literally he's killed himself because he's failed his role as doing that. You see the dark side of this? It's like, oh my God, this is propelled it. But him just dying here just doesn't do anything.
No. The van's like got the green and blue colours. That reminds me of like the Scooby Gang car.
You mean the Mystery Machine?
Mm.
Oh man. Oh God.
Dark.
And later on in the TV series, they called themselves Scooby Gang, didn't they?
They pretty much do.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, except, you know, this version of Daphne kicks fucking ass.
She's a good Buffy, actually.
I mean, she's getting there, isn't she?
She's like, I don't know, it's obviously, it's difficult now because we know Sarah Michelle Gellar so fondly as Buffy.
Yeah.
But like, what's the name again? The actress in this?
Chrissy Swanson.
She does a good job of, you know, establishing that character.
It does. Uh-oh. No, the light! It burns me! Ah! Talk about a hit and run. I know. Ah, it's just so weird knowing that that's
Pee-wee Vamp.
Look at me. You can see he's enjoying himself, even though he's so not suited for the role. What? You can't outmaneuver him. He's stuck on the roof. Oh, he's gone for the grab. Nice. Oh. Well, that did it.
Give me a break. You ruined my new jacket. Kill him a lot.
Kill him a lot. That's a great line. Boing. Yes.
Hi. Is that your van?
Yeah, it was. So ready for the jump.
Oh no. Yes. That's good.
I actually like that they don't turn into ash straight away.
Yeah, because yeah, they did that on the show all the time, didn't they? Mm. And this one's like, you know, they're dead. They're dead.
I prefer it when they it's more of like, because you get like a nice, cool impact because you see the stake go in.
Yeah.
And then they don't, they just like die like a, like, I guess they might go into ash after that, but it's a more slow process.
I think it's just, you're missing the satisfaction of that stab. Mm. Just stabbing in the heart. But, you know, I've never stabbed anybody or put anything through a stake, so I'm not sure, but you never know. I'm missing that.
But it's almost like they pop on the TV series. They pop it, they burst into ash, don't they?
Yeah, that's true. Here, you can actually feel the impact. In the meantime, though, right, Luke Perry's around. And Luke Perry is trying to escape the town because, you know, obviously, now his best friend David Arquette's now floating everywhere. Just floating through windows, trying to find something to suck. So it's basically in the van, and then he gets confronted by Pee Wee Herman and two other vampire minions, and this is where you got this really bizarre sequence in a van, where Pee Wee Herman's hanging onto the roof of a van, and just trying to get to Luke Perry for no other reason other than I don't know what the reasoning behind is other than let's have a randomly cool sequence.
Yeah, it's a bit odd, a bit weird,
because he puts his arm. Like through the roof of the car, and I don't know how this happened, and it doesn't really explain much. I don't know how vampires work in this case, but he loses an arm.
Yeah,
and ever since, and for the rest of the movie, he's just called Lefty, which I find kind of funny actually. It's like needing a hand. Hey,
I'm just trying to think of like in like does that in the TV series if an arm got lopped off or whatever. Would it grow back straight away, or would it be like just like
a stump for a while, like it is in the movie.
I kind of think he'd just be a... I think I like the idea that if you lose a body part, you're forever an amputee, but you don't feel anything because there's no blood circulating, you know, so you don't lose anything from having your arm chopped off. And it kind of just shows a little bit how Luke Perry gets more introduced into the story now and how Buffy... do that, because at the beginning there's the whole thing, they're a love interest, but like Luke Perry doesn't like Buffy because Buffy's like a valley girl and a bit of a dimwit, and Luke Perry's like the rebellious, grungy, like older teen who dropped out of high school and now he's a mechanic and he's hardcore and grr and stuff. But actually he's just a bit of a sweetheart, because that's how they interlock together and how they become like interested in each other ever since, because they seem to help each other afterwards.
Yeah, because he's obviously, even though he kind of sort of shows dislike towards her, he kind of does like her in a way. He wants to like her. And when she starts showing the real person that she really is, he starts warming to her a lot more.
Yeah, basically, when she stops the Valley Girl act and becomes the Buffy we like at the end, you know, I was like, actually, she's pretty cool. And it's cemented at the prom dance. Because now Merrick is dead. Right, Buffy's upset because she believes it's entirely her fault that Merrick is dead, because she just wasn't strong enough to fight off Lovos's powers, right?
It's weird that Hitler has a guy called him Valak. That's the nun in The Conjuring too. Now I'm just pitching Donald Sutherland in a, like,
in a nun outfit. Just saying creepy things like, I'm watching you. Actually, have you ever...
imagine his face, like, in a, like, a little sort of circle. Like, in the
shall we Photoshop that? Someone Photoshop that, please. I think Donald Sutherland as the nun would have made the movie The Nun a lot better. Have you seen that?
I haven't seen it.
I have. It's garbage. And that's a real shame, because I like The Conjuring too.
Yeah.
And that's actually a really good movie. Yeah, even though it was a bit goofy, I kind of liked it. I really liked it. I had a good time with it.
Sometimes you don't need to elaborate more on a character, though, do you?
Why give a backstory sometimes? Yeah. It's like, we have the nun, and the nun looks... All the trailers may look like, oh my God, it's the scariest thing ever. It is pants. But now I want to watch that movie with Donald Sutherland as a nun. Because, my God, instant win.
It'd be great.
So now... Now got him. Okay, so the nun's dead, and so now he's dead. And so he says, like, since she's dealing, I can't do this anymore. I feel like I can't. I failed him already. How am I supposed to do it? So she kind of gives up and decides to finally go to the senior prom.
Also, just want to remember is when he's dying.
Yeah, Mr. Nun is dying.
He goes, you do everything wrong, and then he says, like. She goes, sorry. And he goes, no, keep doing it wrong. And it's like, where are you going with this?
he ends up talking in riddles all the time. Because this genuinely proves how he just improvised most of his lines.
Yeah, because obviously what he's trying to say is, maybe the way you do it is going to be the right way, and keep doing it your way.
Keep doing it your way, not my way.
But he's... he's just like, he's being dead negative and he's not getting to the point.
It's just getting there. And it's like, okay, it's more. And then it says, like, you need to stop, wait till the music stops. And you're like, you're talking in riddles. That's the thing, the entire movie, he's kind of talking like that. Like, not in riddles, but it's incoherent. Like, it's like he's saying sentences that don't link next to each other. And so he's just he sounds like a crazy person. And so with that sequence, we are baffled and confused. I don't understand anything he's saying.
And you don't feel sad, really, in the movie when he dies.
Because we haven't spent enough time with him.
No.
Nor was he actually that useful. Because it seems like Buffy could do this quite a bit on her own, which she really... I love that, because it seems like she did... Because she pulls a punch and actually punches him in the face. And he says, my God, I can throw a punch. I've never punched anyone before. And Rod's on saying, clearly you have, because you hit me square in the nose. And then suddenly, she knows Kung Fu.
Yeah, but the thing is with that, if she has the strength to fight vampires, if she punched... a human that hard, he would have broke his face, surely. He would have, like...
fly across the room!
Yeah. But no, he's just got a bit of a bloody nose.
It's like, oh, I've got a bit of a crack. Yeah. Ow! Maybe he wasn't using a full Buffy powers. It's not a full max yet.
Yeah, but no, you don't really feel anything for when he dies. All he's there to do is to say is that you're the Slayer, and he shows her a few of her powers.
Yeah.
And then he pops off, but you don't really feel bad about it. And it's really hard for you to let go of that he looks like a flasher or something. Like a
pervert. It just doesn't look right. Whose idea was it to dress him like some kind of weird noir detective?
Even when, like, that's you know that he's not a threat and he's not a weirdo, you can't let go of it. He kind of still is talking and acting a bit like
a weirdo.
Yeah.
And then you think, oh, that's just him. But then it's like, well, he's not really helping much. So he's... As overall, he's a bit of a useless character.
Mm.
But that's, again, for me, the bit that made me like him, like his role, is the fact that he's so weird and appears out of nowhere and talks incoherently. But that's because we're laughing at him, not with him.
Yeah.
Come on, Luke Perry, save the day! Do the slow dance, you know you want to. You shaved the soul patch for her.
It seemed as well like... It's a really long shaving process just to shave that little bit off.
Yeah, I know, right? It's just like, it's just a tiny bit. But, you know, we had to put the effort in and say, you know what? There we go. That's it. It's gone. There he is! Ooh, he's looking quite suave. Looking quite suave there, Luke Perry. Well done. Like, he's got a suit on, but he's got leather jacket, slick back. I like it.
See, he's like the loved interest character that's kind of like, as elements of, because he's like an outcast like Angel was, but
yeah.
But he, his personality is more sort of like Xander, like
a bit of Xander, bit of Spike, a little bit all mixed together.
Yeah.
So you can see, like, again, all the elements that would be on the show are all in this movie. You just have to dig a bit. Come on, Luke Perry. Where did my ass kick to ask for the dance? Kiss, 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 kiss! Oh, yay! Oh, this is so well needed right now.
It's actually a pretty cool look. He's got a leather jacket over, like, a shirt and, like, sort of... waistcoat and stuff.
So it looks badass!
It's like a tuxedo with a leather jacket almost.
Because you know why? Because he's still a rebel. He's a rebel at heart!
Alright, so they're all now finally in the... they're all finally doing the prom thing, right? So Buffy arrives with a prom dress kind of thing. Buffy's there. The dumb squad's there, who's already done the whole thing and basically just disses her. And then the boyfriend shows up, who's left her to be with a bimbo. And the excuse kind of says, like, so you dumped me over voicemail, basically? It's like, so you weren't at home. It's like, you're never at home. Because I'm doing something serious, like fighting vampires, you know, basically. So she's now left alone. And then Luke Perry shows up looking really swag. In the whole like with a waistcoat and shirt, but with a leather jacket and tight jeans.
It's like it's the version of it's the male version of the leather jacket over the prom dress, isn't it?
Yes, yeah.
It's the male version of that, because he's got a prom outfit under a biker leather jacket, isn't it? Yeah,
he's looking like he's looking that kind of smooth.
He's got slick back hair as well.
He shaves the soul patch.
Yeah, he's got a full like wet shave just for a little bit here on his chin.
Well, that didn't make me laugh. He puts the whole thing on just to go whoop, that one slice is like done. I'm already baby smooth. Done. Oh, man. So they finally lock together and they finally become a couple by this point. They're like, oh, they're kissing. They're finally interlocking because they're finally realizing that those two kind of work well as a team.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then the vampires show up and invade the senior dance. And I love the bit. It's like, and I love the bit because Buffy's like, Buffy says, that's fine. They won't be able to come in. You have to invite them in. And then Hilary Swank goes and said, like, but I invited them. They're all seniors.
Come on. Yeah.
So this is the look.
That's the badass
prom dress with a leather jacket on top.
With a steak in hand. She looks such a badass. Cartwheels!
God, that's got to be a bullet point. Like, so much dry ice.
Yes, I've got that in there.
Fucking hell.
Yeah! Nice one, Luke Perry. He's looking swag. Anarchy!
Admit it, Buffy. There are times when you just feel less than fresh.
That's a line.
You're pathetic. Not even fit to die for him.
Pee-wee Herman vampire. And it reminds me of, like, he looks like, kind of looks like a Halloween Chad Kroger. You know that little man?
Oh, my God! Oh, my God! I have not thought of that! Oh, he's dead now. Oh, it's like...
You're gonna wish
he never made it as a wise man. He could have gone as a poor man stealing, but he definitely didn't last long enough as a vampire.
Oh, this is, I remember this. He takes ages to die, which is quite funny.
It's like he's kicking it like,
It's so good.
Buffy goes out and starts beating all the vampires up and everything else. And this is where loads of random cameos come in, like Seth Green's a bloody vampire in this and all that kind of stuff. And so loads of throws, bit of sloppy fighting, but a bit better because she's getting better at it. And then lured in by Pee Wee Herman and Rutger Hauer to do that sort of bit. And this... Oh, okay, Pee Wee Herman's death
is probably the best part of the movie.
The entire movie, it's the best, right? Because, to be honest, he is taking the role campy but semi-serious. Although he does have some amazing one-liners. Mm. It's like, for example, when his arm gets ripped off, he says something, I love the line, he goes up to him, it's like, you ruined my favourite jacket. Minions, kill him a lot! Really, that's, I like it, these is one-liners. And he's like, he's playing the camp but playing serious, but in, like, a good middle ground.
Mm.
But then the death just says, fuck serious.
What's weird about his death is he doesn't look actually like he's in pain at all. It's like he's pretending to be in pain, like.
Yes,
and it makes it funny, but at the same time it's like, you don't look like you hurt.
It's like, why milk this for so long? Because I love it. He gets stabbed, and then just like at one point, he falls off screen. It's like, oh, he's dead. And he just gets back up again. Ah! Oh! But he sounded, doesn't look like he's in pain, but like, he stepped on Lego. Kind of pain. It's like, ooh, ah, ooh, ooh. I love the bit, he's falling on the ground, he just starts kicking. Ah, just kicking the wall, like, ah, oh no, ah no, ah, hurts. And he just keeps going. And then he appears later on in the end credits, still going.
Yeah, I think they should have had him after the credits as well. I think he's still, like, he's gone through the entire credits and he's still going.
And I think at the end of it, he finally croaks, but when he croaks, it's really like, just like a really like anticlimactic,
But then it cuts to black, and then
you hear him again, ah!
That would be brilliant.
I love it because it is the stupidest thing in the whole movie. And apparently, according to the notes, that entire thing was improvised. It was Paul Reubens's idea for him to milk his death.
Yeah.
And you know what? Well done to him, because it is literally the funniest thing in the entire film.
Yeah, no, it's great.
Oh.
I think that's a highlight.
Girls, maybe I'll surprise you.
This is your defense.
Please!
No. My keen fashion sense.
Oh!
It's like he was enjoying the fire in his face. He's kind of like a
toasty.
Want to lose weight and keep
eating? Here he is.
Here he is.
The fucking samurai.
With a katana!
Have you beg split opened like rotted fruit? Definitely not a student.
Yeah!
Tell you what, Rutger Hauer really embraces any role he's in, doesn't he? Really.
No matter whether it's a great role or a hammy one, he loves it.
I haven't finished with you, bitch.
It's kind of funny having him say bitch in that makeup. Bitch. Oh! Come on. Yes!
Now, I'm really pissed off.
Yes!
Oops.
Oops. Oh, it is only a flesh wound.
I've just got to rewind that sec because I just saw the coolest name of a guy ever on the credits.
All right, we're going to go back.
Let's go back. Just I think it was not long ago, just before the...
Oh, I think I might know what it is. Is it like the on-set costume maker or something? Let's have a look.
Where is it?
Rocky Slaymaker! Onset dresser is Rocky Slaymaker.
That is the best name I've ever heard.
It's so metal. Oh my god, that is so metal.
So he dies. Well, dies, air quotes. Mm. It takes forever. And then Rutger Hauer is like there playing a violin and it's getting soothed and smoothed from it. And then this is where Offie realizes how to stop being lured by Rutger Hauer's, you know, Lovos, right? Lovos plays music. It's the music that's luring Buffy in. So all you got to do is stop the music. So he does that. So she does that by breaking the violin and goes, oh, it's silence. Buffy's like, oh, so this is what the note, like, when the music stops means. Finally, something that Donald Sutherland said that makes sense. Mm. And so she just runs off, like just beats Rutger Hauer up and goes back into the ballroom to stop you know, beat up the rest of vampires, right? And then once he thinks it's all over, Rutger Hauer breaks through a wall just and says, I'm not done with you, bitch.
The way he says bitch though is so great.
Bitch. Bitch, 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 bitch. And there's a whole, like, really weird-ass sword fight sequence where he pulls out a katana from nowhere.
Yeah.
Like, nowhere.
He doesn't seem like a katana man, does he?
He doesn't seem like you'd have a samurai sword around him anywhere. But he does, and starts fighting Buffy, who's holding, like, a flagpole. And so, again, kind of sloppy fighting until properly stabbed and finally he's killed. Finally, he's killed. So Luke Perry and Buffy sort of stab him at the same time, which is kind of a cool thing, and then dies, right? And then the movie then kind of ends there where, you know, Luke Perry sort of, where the relationship's sort of building up and it's like, and they both end up just walking into the sunset kind of thing.
Yeah.
In a very sweet way. And then the movie ends, cuts through, Pee-wee Herman still dies.
Yeah, he's still going.
Still going. Credits. So yeah, that was Buffy the Vampire Slayer. So overall, what do you think?
I still really like the movie. I can separate it from the TV series. And there are a lot of people can't. That's why they hate it. But I, because I remember seeing it before the TV series,
and I remember liking it as a kid. It got the nostalgia on top.
Yeah.
And I just treat it as something fun and like, you know, just... I'm not expecting it to be great.
Yes.
But I just want it to be enjoyable, and it is. So yeah. I like it, yeah.
I think, honestly, I remember watching it years and years and years ago and hated it. Because I think it was because I was in that mindset of Buffy the TV series, right?
So did you see the movie after?
Yeah, after. Yeah. I watched like the first few seasons of Buffy, and I was like, oh, there was a movie based with this? Okay, let me watch the movie. And realised, oh, this is not what I expected, and I didn't like it. And it was very 90s as well, like very, it's very like, because it's so 90s and so cheesy and campy. But then looking back at the lines and some of the scripts, some of the jokes do land. Some of it does feel like Joss Whedon's writing. Some of it does feel snappy and works. And the character development, even though it is a bit rough to get there, the Buffy we get at the end is actually quite a cool Buffy.
Mm. And yeah, I think it's that's the difference. If you'd seen the movie before the TV series, you'd have a bit more respect for the movie. I think it's just that people who went the other way really didn't like the movie.
I think watching this now, I can really appreciate it because it's now been quite a long time since I've watched the TV series. It's still a part of, you know, still part of the ethos of pop culture, but it's not as ingrained anymore. So I finally got a bit of distance. Mm. And I realised, actually, this is quite fun. Quite well pulled off. Quite well in general. Is it amazing? No, it's not mind-blowing, but the bits that do land are really good.
Yeah.
I had a lot of fun with this. This is it good for like a bad movie night? Not really, because it's still
It doesn't push those trashy elements enough, does it? But it's like it's just fun and enjoyable, and it makes you laugh, you know.
Yeah, you know, if it's Clueless with vampires, but it's only Clueless for 20 minutes.
Mm.
Afterwards, then it's just kind of decent character development between Luke Perry and Kirstie Swanson. And I think those two really had good chemistry together.
Yeah, definitely.
And I actually say this is surprisingly underrated. This is another one I'd say, revisionists, go back, watch this again. Now that Buffy the Vampire Slayer has been put away, and now that Joss Whedon's not got the fire that he used to have in terms of popularity, because he's still great at doing scripts and stuff. I mean, bloody hell, he did the first two Avengers movies.
Mm.
But, you know, we now got his style and so on, but I no longer feel that attached to Joss Whedon and his style anymore. So watching back as this, I feel a bit more appreciative. Plus, it's like, you know, baby steps.
Yeah. I think you cut it a bit more slack, don't you, now?
Yeah.
The movie, I think.
I cut a bit more slack. It's funny, it's quirky. Yes, it's stupid sometimes. Yes, it's dumb, but it's not terrible. And I think, give it a watch, guys. I think generally give it a watch.
Yeah, definitely. I recommend it.
So that is the end of the episode. So if you, just to throw it in, if you like what you hear, you know, obviously we have all the places. But I kind of want to start throwing in, write some reviews up. If you like what you're hearing, put some reviews up on iTunes or on other platforms.
Yeah, you don't have to write a message, just a few lines, just saying what you think about it.
And if you do, you know, you might get a shout out on a future episode.
Yeah,
we might read a couple of reviews out, stuff like that. If you have an opinion on one of the movies we've watched, because we've done already now, this is episode 14 now.
Yeah.
So there's plenty of movies you have an opinions on. So if you have any of them, just write them down in the reviews or put them in the comments or anything like that. And yeah, we'll give a shout out.
Definitely.
So what shall we do next month? I'm having a think. Let's go trashier. Let's go pure 80s maybe. Maybe something with aviator sunglasses and a really cool badass quip or two.
Definitely. Looking forward to that one.
So there we go. So until next time, keep an eye on your trash. There might be some treasure in there. See you guys later.
See you guys.
The Trash Tapes is a podcast created by Enigmatic Productions. It is hosted and created by Johan Chapul and co-starring Edward Harvey. If you like what you hear, subscribe to the podcast. We are on Spotify, iTunes, Acast, and Buzzsprout. You can also find more information about us on our social media sites. We have Instagram, which is under Enigmatic Productions. We have a Facebook page called under Studio Enigmatic, and we have a Twitter under Enigmatic_UK. For more information on the other kind of products and projects that we're up to, check out our website at www.enigmaticproductions.co.uk.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Thank you for listening to this podcast episode and hope you enjoyed it. If you did, please share it around with movie lovers you know, maybe add a star rating or write a good review. All of this helps with the algorithm and provides us with more opportunities to reach the ears to a whole new bunch of bad film fanatics. Want to find out more about us? Then head over to our socials where we provide sneak peeks and up-to-date news on everything nostalgic and trashy. You can find our Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter pages in the description, so please follow us. See you next time, cinephiles.